I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest this week is Cuevas Peacock. Cuevas is a community organizer with Grassroots Community Development. He talks about how we can make our neighborhoods stronger, why the development happening on Elm Avenue is not gentrification, and what it means to build incrementally. But first, it's the Small Business Spotlight, presented by American Bank. This September marks 3 years of Downtown Depot on KWBU. I started this program because when we opened Pokio's, I found myself hearing inspiring stories from entrepreneurs swinging for the fences who just weren't getting press in the local media sources. Now, my hope is that Downtown Depot serves as a time capsule for future Wacoans, honest, informative documentation of a period of transformative growth in our city's history. Hannah Austin is a force, and likely would have drawn the attention of local news sources eventually, but I'm particularly grateful to use this platform to share her story. This Small Business Spotlight focuses on a young woman unfettered by tradition. She always goes with her gut, and it's taken her to a new storefront on the 600 block of Austin Avenue.
I own Bittersweet. It's a cookie business that isn't your average cookie, I'd say. It's a step up or like a modern twist on like the average chocolate chip cookie.
Bittersweet has become known for its gigantic baked concoctions that could quell even the hungriest of food hounds.
So they're handcrafted and we stuff them with Nutella, caramel, anything crazy you can think of. We've done a brownie stuffed cookie.
The idea started one summer when she was bored at home scrolling through Instagram.
I saw a lot of stuff on social media about like New York colleges, and they had like a lot of different options there, and I noticed that, you know, Waco didn't have that many.
Hannah's friends began dropping by just to see what she'd whipped up. Eventually, they asked her to bake custom orders, and by the end of summer, she'd built a rabid following. That fall, she started at Heritage Creamery, baking their cookies and eventually selling her own through the store. But even that step up wasn't enough for a woman willing to bet on herself.
Over time, as we grew, or as I grew with Bittersweet, I think it was kind of obvious that a decision had to be made. And it was either I stay at Heritage and, you know, join their team, or I tried to grow elsewhere.
One reason Hannah felt confident leaving the nest was that she'd just been accepted to a business incubator program at Baylor.
Should I get the cookies and creams or the s'mores?
Mm-hmm.
Are they both good?
They're both so good.
All right, I'll try with the s'mores first.
Bittersweet had a dynamic leader, a drool-worthy product, and now just needed a little more guidance. That's when she connected with Corey Dickman, operations coordinator of Hustle Coworking, who told her about available square footage across from him on Austin Avenue, and who now runs her books, so Hannah can spend time doing what she loves.
He helps me with like the things that I don't really like to focus on. Like, a lot of businesses are either too focused on the money or too focused on the product to not understand like the importance of like balancing everything out and making sure that you have enough to spend and pay your employees and stuff. And so he really helps me keep an eye on that, because like I don't care about that at all.
To make up for a lack of experience, Hannah listens to podcasts religiously, picking up leadership and team-building traits that have strengthened the bond among the staff. She said it can be uncomfortable as a 21-year-old bossing around her contemporaries, but she's gone to great lengths to ensure that everyone feels equal as the business grows.
I told all of our employees, like, before we started, whatever happens beyond this point, it's because of, like, us as a team. And so any losses or anything that we would celebrate, we'd do it together because, like, that's what happens from here on out.
That's the kind of attitude we need more of in downtown. Not just within our separate businesses, but among the small business community as a whole. As someone who owns my own cookie business, I could have been frustrated or cynical or scared when Bittersweet opened up 6 blocks from our store in the Hilton. But it rings hollow for me to talk about how much I love Waco and I want it to get bigger, but only in every industry except mine. The success of our city comes as a team, and we need to welcome rule breakers like Hannah so we can all grow together.
You have to do something different. You can't follow someone's words or someone's rules. There's no rule book. And like, I think that's how I found success.
The Small Business Spotlight is presented by American Bank, with three locations in Waco, including an expanded branch at Franklin and Fourth. This is the Word on the Street, our monthly segment where we talk about what is happening on the ground floor of Waco business. My guest this week is Drew Galitz. Drew and his co-owner, Payne Matisic, have just started Bidly, a new app that can connect you with local deals to businesses in Waco. Welcome to the program, Drew.
How's it going? Thank you for having me.
Give us the elevator pitch for Bidly.
So basically, Bidly is it's an app that you can download on your smartphone. It gives you discounts and free stuff all around Waco, from escape rooms to restaurants to cycle workout places and just discounts and things like that all around Waco.
And your business partner in this, Payne, he was a football player at Rice.
Correct.
You were a punter for Baylor football. What do you think about the football experience has prepared you guys for launching this startup?
Honestly, I think just hard work, just kind of starting. Playing at Baylor, honestly, was just really a dream come true. Being on the football team, we had a lot of ups and downs. We had to start from the top my freshman year and then kind of regressed as my sophomore year came and all the stuff that came out. So we had to rebuild. And kind of with this app is kind of what I feel like has came along with just having to start something up again and make something. So this app has really been like that for me.
Yeah, so you're always looking at the ground floor. Right. Whenever you're starting a new business, right. You start a new season. It doesn't matter what our record was last year. We're 0-0 starting.
Right.
And we got to find a way to win.
Exactly.
I love that mentality. And I do find that athletes, particularly Division I athletes like yourself, do have a grit to them that I think is so helpful when you go out into the real world, even if you don't move on to a professional level after that. The app itself, Bidly, I love the user experience. Mm-hmm. The Android version is going to be rolling out this fall. It's currently available on Apple iPhones. But there's a number of local businesses that have gotten involved. And as someone who owns a local business myself, I'm always a bit scared to jump in bed with one of these companies because are you really using my network to promote your app?
Right.
But with this one, there was a terrific following in the Dallas area where your partner and you were from, and y'all are just now introducing it to Waco.
Right, right. Yeah, and the good thing about the app is that whenever you're at whatever location or restaurant, wherever you're at, you have to be inside of the restaurant to use the app. So it's really, 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 it's a really good app that can honestly just give you great stuff and great discounts and stuff like that. So it's been really, really good so far. We just started in March, and then everyone kind of left for the summer, and now we're kind of just trying to get it back on a roll.
Drew, how does Bidly differentiate itself from Groupon or other coupon services?
Well, for Bidly, it's a free app for the users. And a really cool thing with Bidly is we use geolocation. So, for instance, say I'm walking to the Baylor football game this Saturday, and I'm in downtown Waco, and I happen to walk by Oh My Juice or J-Pedal. I'll receive a notification on my phone that just says, come to Oh My Juice, you'll get a dollar off your cup of whatever it is that you get. So it's really, really good.
Leveraging technology to give locals the deals that they love. Bidly, B-I-D-L-Y. You can find it on the App Store. Drew Galitz and his partner, Payne Matisic, are the creators of Bidly. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
Cuevas Peacock is a community organizer based in East Waco working for grassroots community development, and very happy to have him as my guest this week on Downtown Depot. Welcome to the program.
Happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
What's your Waco history, Cuevas?
So I've been in Waco since November 2015. I came here after college. After college, I was in education for some time back in Port Arthur, where I'm originally from, for about 3 or 4 years or so. And then wanting to do more community development type work, wanted to learn more about the economic development side of things, and wanted to learn more about how can I help best help to revitalize the downtown where I'm from, Port Arthur. I reached out. Well, I became a part of a program called AmeriCorps Vista, which is what brought me here to Waco, where I was stationed in place with City Center Waco, which does downtown economic development for the city. And I was in charge with connecting with local neighborhood associations, as well as coordinating and getting up the WIBRA program up and running and up and started. So I was able to come in, get that started, and get it going. And it's now in its fourth cohort. And so I was able to come here and just become a part of that. And then from there, I transitioned to my current job here at Grassroots Community Development.
So let's step back for a little bit. And I'd like to know about the AmeriCorps Vista program. I know that's something that a lot of young people do to try to get involved in their communities. What did you learn through working with AmeriCorps that you were able to bring to Waco?
Yeah, and so the thing about AmeriCorps Vista is that it allows you to be placed at a particular organization, a nonprofit. So I didn't necessarily learn from AmeriCorps Vista. It created me the opportunity to learn from an organization, which okay. I learned from City Center, Downtown Economic Development, the value of and the benefits of TIFs and PIDs, and just how can we go out and revitalize a downtown struggling community, a struggling downtown area to where it can be more beneficial to all who are a part of it. And so that's the beauty about AmeriCorps. It places you in a position with an organization, whether it be economic development, whether it be health or education, across the country, and gives you something to help build your resume. Oftentimes, you graduate from college and they ask you for this internship here, or they ask you for a lot of experience. And in order to get the experience, you know, you need an opportunity. And so AmeriCorps Vista provides you with opportunity to gain experience in something that you're passionate about while giving back to your country.
I can tell that you're good at your job because you talk in acronyms. So you're mentioning TIFs and PIDs. For the listeners who might not be familiar with these, those two are the TIF, the Tax Increment Finance Zone, which we've talked about often here on Downtown Depot, the PID, the Public Improvement District. But these are tools that cities have at their disposal to incentivize development. We also have incentive programs that you might offer tax breaks to a big company who wanted to move to Waco. But it seems as if the jury's still out on a lot of these incentive programs, whether they really do, in fact, move the needle for the city itself. Do you think that there are programs that Waco's employing that are really useful for economic development? Or do you see other models in various cities across the country that might be beneficial for Waco to integrate here?
Yeah, so I would say that the TIF program is fairly useful. However, it could be more useful and it could be more inclusive to the surrounding communities that they are being placed in. And that can happen through the implementation of community benefits agreements. And so what they are simply, if a project receives public dollars, public funds, there's going to be a certain public demand placed upon it. And so if we can utilize more TIF funds that are inclusive and that include community benefits agreements, then it can start moving the needle to whereas not only do the developer receive some type of growth and gain, but the communities that the development is happening in receives a growth and gain as well.
I've been working with a group at City Center Waco, and we've been coming up with a community developments agreement that we want to be sharing with the city. And, of course, every community has its own benefits and the own struggles there. But when you look at community development agreement or community benefit agreements, rather, what do you see as integral in a development agreement that you would have with the community to make sure that the benefits stay there and are with them? Are there any things that you think are staples that need to be in every community benefits agreement?
Well, what initially comes to mind is that they have a living wage. Because oftentimes we have these new jobs, these new projects come up, and they offer opportunities for people to get employed, but they do that in a way where people can't afford to really live with the jobs that are being offered. And so how can we ensure that if someone's going to receive public dollars and public funds, that they can make sure their employees have a living wage? Another thing is that that they hire a certain amount of people from that particular zip code. And yeah, that can be easier said than done, but if we can hire some type of percentage, 15, 10%, 25%, to whereas people from that zip code where this development is happening, that they are hiring people from there. I often see new developments come out and new business come out, and what's lacking is people who look like the community that they are in. And that can mean a whole lot, not only for the people who are residents there, but for the business as well. That shows that you're welcoming. That shows that you are a fan of the culture. That shows that you are intentional about making sure people in the community actually start to patronize your business as well. And so that, I will also say, if possible, how can you have a certain amount of minority contractors that are reflective of the community that the development going in. And so if you're in South Waco is traditionally Hispanic American. And so a certain amount of minority contractors who are Hispanic American who will be hired and be utilized in this development. And so those are a couple of things that I think should be inclusive in all CBAs. But at the same time, what is best for a CBA, Julius, what's best for the community? So it varies depending upon the location you're in.
And I can already hear the listeners in outcry. You shouldn't be able to tell me who to hire. You shouldn't tell me what to do with my property. What we're talking about is if you're getting public funds for this, this is a hoop you have to jump through. That seems so reasonable to me.
Exactly. And like, you know, if it's a private developer, if you're not receiving any public funds or at all, then you should do whatever you choose with your business. You know, and that's the beauty about ownership. You have the right to choose what you want to do and what you want to see. But the key here is public funds, public dollars. And so if there are public funds and public dollars being received, there should be some form of public input. And it's most meaningful when it's put into policy through CBAs.
The word gentrification is a very hot button word right now. We're hearing it thrown around a lot in various areas in Waco, particularly on that Elm Avenue corridor and in East Waco. What is gentrification to you?
Yeah. And so it's funny. Gentrification is like an umbrella term used in so many different ways. And so one thing I really hope we can do going forward here in Waco is have a clear definition of what gentrification is. And so to me, what it means, I kind of go back to where the term was initially brought up in England decades ago, not too long ago, actually, where they were, gentry was referred to a certain class of people.
Was the landed gentry, typically the landed.
Exactly. And so this class of people were middle class people, and they were coming in, they were displacing lower class people. And so one thing on gentrification, it refers to displacement due to the lack of affordability of a community or of a place, of a business, of a resident, of a residence. And so whether it be a renter can no longer afford a rent or a property owner can no longer afford the taxes, they have been displaced. And so through this displacement, does gentrification happen?
One word that I've been hearing a lot in this gentrification topic, and something that Megan Henderson from City Center has mentioned to me, is inclusion. Mm-hmm. It's not that people in East Waco are against development. They want development. They don't want to be driving by vacant buildings either, but they want to be included in the process. Gentrification is when people are being left out of the economy, when they're deprived of economic progress based on their class or their race or where they happen to live. And if an area is doing well, if we live in a moral, we live in a wealthy economy, the people who are in that neighborhood should be able to participate in that economy. And if you're as a business owner, even if you are private, not taking any public funds, if you're coming in with a business concept that doesn't fit the neighborhood, you're missing out on people who should be your customers, but you're not going to have them because you've turned the other cheek to them the whole time. I just think it's so important for developers to recognize the economic benefits of not being exclusionary and of not gentrifying, of pulling people up with you. It seems like it works better for the community and it can work better for the developer.
I agree. You want as many customers as possible. And when you are including the people that the business is in from the jump, then you're going to more likely have more customers from that particular neighborhood. Something to keep in mind, though, you know, you have gentrification, you have revitalization, you have redevelopment. What I currently see happening in East Waco hasn't made it to gentrification just yet. And let me be clear there. I really think what's currently happening is cultural displacement, especially on Elm Avenue. East Waco is very broad, very, very expansive. So, but in talking about Elm Avenue, cultural displacement is happening, whereas it used to be a predominantly African-American culture happening along Elm, and now that's no longer the case. And that is the biggest challenge, I think, there. And so when we can clearly define what's happening there, you can clearly figure out what are the best steps to move forward. Whereas there's not a lot of cases of people being displaced around the Elm Avenue corridor due to them no longer being able to afford there just yet. And so we haven't made it there yet. And so if by us having these conversations now, we can assure that we never get there.
That's a step that we've seen our city council take. Kyle Deaver has led cultural training. Mm-hmm. And those are conversations that weren't happening a few years ago. Like, mm-hmm. let's be intentional about this redevelopment of Elm Avenue. It's been a backbone of the African-American community for decades. And we want to make sure that we can preserve this history and promote the history. It's not simple to just come in and put other people in the businesses. They need to be businesses that are beneficial for the people who live in the neighborhoods. We know that living locally is important. And particularly if you don't have a car or if you're disabled, having a grocery store right around the corner from you allows you to eat healthy foods and have a nicer lifestyle. And those are all things that happen because of design and because of development. We can really increase people's life expectancies and we can have better outcomes when it's developed well.
Yeah. And you say these are all things that happen because it's developed well and because it is designed well. And this is also all things that have not happened because it wasn't designed well or was intentionally left out of the particular case, where there are a lot of communities for many reasons. There are several government policies that have led to certain disinvestment in certain communities. And so a lot of times the conversations and the anger comes from there only be a certain intentional amount of investment to these communities once a newer culture comes in. And so we can identify ways to start investing in all of our communities prior to them having to be a certain cultural displacement. Don't think a lot of the anger will lessen.
Cuevas Peacock works for Grassroots Community Development as a community organizer. Can you walk us through a day in the life?
Yeah. And so it's fun. And the reason why I say it's fun, because community includes so many different things. It's health, it's education, it's business, it's neighborhoods, it's churches. And so a lot of times my days are meant meeting with people from all different walks of life, from someone on a city council level to a parent or a grandparent staying at home. And in meeting with these people, I'm able to listen and learn from them, build relationships with them, which is really kind of the crux of my job. Because with these relationships and with these conversations and learning of how do they want to make their community better, what impact do they want to have in society, we're able to kind of work towards it. And so after I have met with a person, for example, I met with several people recently about how can we improve fitness in our community, listening and learning from them saying, we want to do well. We want to work out more. We can't afford it. And so after these conversations have came out, you can't go here, you can't go here because you can't afford it. What can be done that is affordable? And so from there, we kind of created a plan. Let's have these free workouts in the park. And then from there, just how can we build upon that to start including more health education? And how can we build upon that to start doing this in other places across the city? And so a lot of my days are just spent meeting with different people from all walks of life, learning about how they want to make their community better, and helping them kind of flesh out those plans so we can work alongside the community, not just work on the community.
I love the way that you're phrasing that. It builds upon this. It mm-hmm. builds upon that. It's all about incrementalism. There is no one government program that can come and solve the problem of poverty. But you need this group working, and you need that group working. You need Waco Restaurant Week, having all these restaurants participate, and a proceed goes to Caritas to keep that food bank full. It takes everyone in the community doing their own, what I call a positive increment, just a little bit. If I do this a little bit better today, you do that a little bit better the next day, we're going to be really happy with where the community stands.
Yeah, and not only that creates development, that creates ownership. I have owned this little piece of my community. I have owned this thing that has made my community better. And when you have ownership of something, it's more sustainable. And so whereas as each and every pocket of Waco is constantly moving forward, all of Waco becomes better because of it. And so I just love the fact that we can reach out to people from all different walks of life and just who have great ideas about this or greater ideas about that. And we can work together one step at a time to make our community better.
How do we convince people of the benefits of ownership, even if it's not owning a physical piece of property, but it's taking hold of your community, taking hold of your one little piece that you can control? But if someone hasn't been involved in the community, maybe they don't understand the benefits that come of being surrounded by like-minded individuals who are pulling in the same direction. What's your greatest pitch for why someone needs to become an owner?
Well, I would have a pitch. I would have more of a process. I would kind of focus on what are they already taking ownership of. If they're taking ownership of their family, how can you work with them to recognize, working with them so that they already see the benefit of being a leader in their family environment. Knowing how important that is to you, how can we utilize you and utilize your asset, utilize that strength that you have for family engagement, family development, to help somebody else? And so a lot of times we try to say that somebody should be taking ownership of their community in this way or that way, when in actuality, we should be focusing on what they're already doing and building upon that. And by doing that, we're not pushing this. We're kind of walking alongside them as well.
Yeah, it's not just a hand up to get you out of the ditch. It's a hand hold, and exactly. We're going to be walking through this together.
Exactly, and by walking with them together, we're valuing what do they prioritize. And once we kind of value what they prioritize, then, okay, they see that you really want to build a relationship with them, that we really value them for who they are currently. And from that point on, once you have built a relationship, then you can start to work on other things together. But it really starts with building a relationship first. And the best way to build a relationship first is by valuing people for what they believe in, what they value.
One of the best books I've come across recently is a book by an author named Chris Arnaud, who used to be, a Wall Street banker. But he started hanging out at McDonald's in more lower income parts of New York City. And then he took a road trip and basically just stopped at McDonald's all across the country. And the name of this book is called Dignity. It's about whether you're meeting someone in a McDonald's or you're meeting them on a street corner. In every single profession, every single person, they have dignity. And it is our job to put people in positions where they can feel empowered, where they aren't just waiting for someone to give them a hand to pull them out of the ditch, but they're looking to give their hands to someone else and help them get out. And if you don't feel like you have that dignity, you don't feel like you have that power, it can be a sad, dark place to live. But people like you preaching this gospel of dignity, preaching the gospel of let's do it together, that can really be a life-changing message for someone.
Yes, I agree. And I think taking that into account, I would like to say that my passion is to work myself out of a job. Because by doing that, I have helped people realize that it's not my job to speak on behalf of this person, speak on behalf of that person, or to speak for this person. It is my job to make sure that as I walk forward and move forward, that I have someone alongside me. So where no matter what background of life you come from or who you are, you have the ability and you feel empowered enough to speak for yourself. And then once they're speaking for themselves, getting out the way. Letting them run, letting them fly. If they need help, they can call them in, and we can work together. But really just kind of making sure that people have the power to push themselves forward and push their vision forward and push their voice forward. Because by doing so, that's when you build true ownership of a community, when you can own your own voice without anybody having to speak for you.
Waco is developing so rapidly, and the issues that the city faced 5 years ago are probably different from the issues that you're facing now as a community developer. What would you say about working in Waco specifically is the greatest part of what you do?
Yeah, there's the energy. The energy, there's energy for making our community better, for making every single neighborhood as strong as possible. Energy comes from city council. It comes from school board. It comes from Baylor. It comes from the top all the way to the bottom. And so just the energy of everyone in the community with a desire to make Waco better and help Waco move forward. Whereas a lot of other communities across the country, they don't have that energy. You know, they're kind of stagnant. And so that's probably my favorite thing about being here, being able to work with a lot of like-minded people who also want to see Waco grow.
And going back to what you're saying about building, you build those relationships, you build those positive increments, and then you build off the energy of other people. If you're the only person who's struggling, it's going to be a really long, hard road for you.
Exactly. But if you're one of the many people who are thriving, it's going to be a whole lot better road to go on.
Cuevas Peacock is a community organizer with Grassroots Community Development. Thank you so much for stopping by Downtown Depot and talking to us.
My pleasure.
Thanks again to Cuevas Peacock, Hannah Austin of Bittersweet, Drew Galitz of Bidley, and to you for tuning in for the 71st episode of Downtown Depot here on KWBU and your podcast apps. Find me on social media at Waco Business News for updates in between shows. And if you like what you hear, check out my McLennan Community College class, Learn to Podcast, this Tuesday from 6 to 9 p.m. downtown at Hustle Coworking. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.